right, everybody, welcome to, I don't actually think we have a name for this. We do our Advertising Week Social Club Chats every Tuesday. We do those, and, you know, this is something new, so we don't have a title for it, but I'm very pleased to have our first guest on the new, well, let's call it a podcast. Our good friend Chris Brogan joining us today. What should we call this thing?
I think we should call it, it's a good question. I think we should call it the eighth day.
The eighth day.
Or the 25th hour.
I like the 25th hour.
It's kind of hidden. Eighth day could be kind of biblical. I get that. So,
how many hours would you actually like in a day?
That's a great question. I had a friend who did traffic work for Boston area traffic. And what she said was what they came to learn through all kinds of effort was that if you had three lanes and you make it a four lane highway, the traffic will change to be full up at four lanes. The more you add to it, the more it will be. So it's just a thing like that.
And you are from Boston. And I think I told you this fun fact, by the way. And I apologize for missing it on the intro, is that the city that I live in Portland, Oregon, if the coin were flipped the other way, we would have been Boston, Oregon.
Wow. That is an interesting fact. I had no idea.
Yes, that is your Cliff Clavin fact of the day. And no, it's true. It's true that the city of Portland was between Portland and Boston, and Portland came up, and so here we are. So here we are. So that's a bar bet. That's a bar bet. But I love Boston. I absolutely adore the city. I know people can't see it right now, and I need to apologize because the intention was to record us on Google Plus, and I really screwed that one up. So you're actually not seeing us. You're hearing us today. But I'll figure it out for next time. But Boston is one of my favorite places, just not just in the country, but on the planet. And one of the things that's very interesting to me, Chris, about Boston is that, yes, it's known as a place that is very intelligent. It's also known as a place with just so many educational opportunities. But outside of that, talk a little bit about the creativity of Boston, because there's so much there.
Well, I mean, it's interesting you asked the question. So here I am. I come along, and today I get into this Ford Taurus SHO that I guess some people call a show to help out the nice folks at Ford show off their great tools like Sync and all this kind of garbage. And I decide to go down to Cambridge, which is right beside Boston, the sister city, to go to the HubSpot headquarters, which is also the East Coast offices of Sonos. There's a Zipcar in that building. There's all kinds of cool, innovative stuff going on. So one reason is there's over 26 big universities in the area, including MIT and Harvard and Boston University and Northeastern. I think that's one deal. And then the other one is, I think that because it's so cold here, we innovate because we're not outdoors enjoying the weather like you all do.
Oh, come on. Somebody in the UK asked us on Twitter about this the other day. They were from the UK, and they said, I hear it's – they made it sound like it was like Clearwater, Florida, the way that they were talking. And I said, no, it's pretty much 40 degrees and rainy this time of year. But no, you're right. The winters are a little bit tough out there, but it's an amazing city. And for those of you going to Boston, make sure you go to the North End. What is Regina Pizzeria, right? Regina Pizza is the best pizza in Boston. Is that correct? Is that accurate?
Regina is most definitely one of those kinds of good pizza places. I would say that is one of those things that people fight over. Not unlike when my trip to Portland, Oregon, there was such a comical moment, Doug, where it was like a skit. Because people invited me out there and they're like, let's go get some coffee. And I'm like, yeah, because like I know Portland's big on coffee. Right. Well, I hadn't, you know, the religion thing hadn't come up to me yet. So there's like four or five people in the group. We walked by seven coffee shops before they agreed on Stumptown at the Ace Hotel. And I'd be like, well, what's that one right there? And they're like, nope. And then I'd be like, how about, no, it's not good in the morning. It's great at dinner. I was like, what? And so I can't say I'm a particular Boston pizza place because I will get in trouble the same way.
Okay, that's fair enough. That's fair enough. So yes, we are very much coffee snobs. And we will never apologize for that. We're also, by the way, because you are on the show today, I'm going to be sending you a box of Oregon hazelnuts, by the way, from a farm that's like 8 minutes away from my house.
I love that. Thank you.
It's just kind of a random thing. You know how at the end, you know, at the end of, you know, a talk show, there's promotional consideration? That's going to be our promotional consideration. So I'm going to send you a little bit of Oregon Awesome out to you.
I think it sounds awesome.
Well, I want to go back a little bit to Advertising Week. I know that you spoke at the NIMRAD show. Outside of that, talk a little bit just about kind of your observations about the week, Advertising Week, your observations and just thoughts on advertising and communications in general, kind of using that week as the lens.
So I didn't get to go to much of it. So it's really funny. I had somebody grab me and say, you know, hey, what's the deal with Advertising Week? And I was like, I don't know. I've just been in here. And everything went downhill from there because like they kept asking me questions and I kept saying, I don't know. And it was just depressing. But I will say this. Advertising Week is an interesting, somewhat incestuous experience from my outsider's perspective, not being an advertising person. But I would also say that there's some opportunity to be had there because it's like the old gang getting together, talking about the good old days and the bad old days. And it's some of the new young bucks trying to get around and smile and meet the people that'll give them their future shot. But there's a real lot of opportunity to bring a little bit more bleeding edge education in. And I think that in the most recent iteration of Advertising Week, that's what I saw. You know, and I think that the real opportunity comes when you get some of the bleeding edge people and get some of the people who talk about the stuff that maybe isn't as easy to consume. I would say that the other thing I see is that there's a lot of using of the old vernacular, and I would mm-hmm. love to see some technologist types get in there and explain that, you know, here's the intersection. And I think that there's some real opportunity there. So I'm excited about, you know, what can be done there, but I didn't get to see as much of it. And so next year I'm going to make a better effort to get to a little bit more of it.
Well, it's very interesting that you bring that up because that's actually a conversation. This is, I guess, peeling back the curtain a little bit with us is we have that conversation constantly. Absolutely. It's absolutely on the top of the list in terms of conversation, because you're right. There's the one side of it on technology where there's so much going on, but also on the communication end, there's so much going on. And in some cases, it does become a bit of a different language. And I think that if we can find the Esperanto between the two of them, then we actually can learn quite a bit. But I'm glad you brought that up and reminded us. I guess I can just say it's safe to say that there will definitely be more of that, but I appreciate that observation very much. One of the things that is our shtick with the Advertising Week Social Club is our tone's a little bit different. We tend to veer a little bit more into the optimistic phase. Some people have called me Dougie Blue Skies. They say, yeah, maybe you're too much of an optimist. I had a colleague in my radio days who sat in a meeting and just endless energy and just incredibly optimistic. And he once said, I will never apologize for being an optimist. And I agree with that. I also think it can be leavened and should be leavened with a bit of pragmatism and reality. But I'd like to get your thoughts on just optimism in general. So in the world that you're in right now and where you're sitting right now, where do you see the optimism coming from?
It's probably, I would say, more often than not coming from the new blood plus the people who have burned themselves out and are looking to get back in it in a different way. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I think there's two camps, I think. One is the one that like they were the absolute poster child of Mad Men and beyond. And you know who I'm thinking of when I say this, partly in this camp, the ones who like really burned it right to the edges, Hank Wozniak. Mm-hmm. I mean, he has been from the biggest ad agencies in the universe and then down to like his idea farm or whatever, is it Content Farm? Hank's got this great project going on now that's like the opposite side of that. It's a small, small shop with, you know, a lot more altruism in place. On the other side of that, I would say that It's the concept farm, sorry. And on the other side of it, I would say that the other people are sort of the 20-somethings who haven't been burned out enough yet. And in the middle, we've got all these, like, you know, people who are kind of humping a job because they don't want to, you know, eat moldy bread anymore. And right. I think that's kind of the difficult part of this equation.
Well, what do you think the responsibility – now, I agree with you, and I think where I'm going with this is – what do you think is the responsibility? And I've lived this. I'm 42 years old. I'm just going to go ahead and admit it. I went through a substantial change in what I was doing professionally. I was known as the radio guy for a long time. Very proud of that. Had an amazing career, an amazing run. Still work within the industry a little bit, but I chose to take that step. What do you feel is the responsibility of somebody old and haggard like me, and conversely, what's the responsibility of a young person in terms of encouraging each other to move forward? So from my perspective, is it wisdom from the younger set? Is it more about enthusiasm? Where do you see?
It's a great question. I really think that there's opportunity on both sides of that, because I think that for example, I had a chance to go down and speak to the comms students at Boston University last night, and I love doing this. Like, I do it two or three times a year. The BU doesn't let me in any more than that because I'm not even, you know, from them or anything like that. I just wander in. And when they do it, you know, what I love is that the students are really anxious and they're looking for, like, the now what. And on the other side of the coin, you have a now what, and you kind of want to see people do something with it. And I guess what I end up thinking about is that on both sides of that equation, it's not that you should worry about trying to pull the middle out of their grind. It's just not going to work. Right. I would say that it's a big to-do. Instead, you should be finding those little 20 somethings and making your own new army. It's like the movie X-Men First Class. You are that. So make that true.
I like that. I like that. We actually talked about, we covered mentoring on the Tuesday chat that we have. Shameless plug here, every Tuesday at 10 a.m. Pacific time. We talked about mentoring this week. Who are some people that you count as your mentors, and who has influenced you along this path even earlier in your career and even now?
You know, it's a strange mix of people. One would be a Brian Clark copy blogger.
Oh, he's awesome.
He's just a swell guy and always, you know, doing a lot of work to, push me in ways that he does or doesn't mean to push me. Mm-hmm. The other people, Seth Godin has on and off given me his opinion whether or not I've asked for it. And that's been really helpful to me because, you know, I think of him as sort of like one of the modern elder statesmen of marketing. Yeah. I'm lucky to have people like Darren Rouse in the blogging world to poke at me sometimes. The other guys are like Tim Sanders. Sanders says he's written a couple of really good books. Love is the Killer App would be the one I love the most of him. And I get advice from him. I tend to find advice from beyond that, just a very eclectic group, and maybe too many to mention. But it's interesting because I tend not to talk to the marketing crowd for marketing advice, and I tend not to talk to the people who have done it in a successful way. I tend to look at sort of outlier people and see what they've done that I can adopt for my own needs, and that's where I find the real business happening.
It's a very good point, because that outside perspective gives just that perspective. Let's continue on with the idea of optimism, and I think that what I do is I tend to put optimism into a few places, and this is still something that I'm still trying to kind of work my head around a little bit, but there's, and I hate using this term, but it is what it is: blind optimism versus bold optimism. Again, I was just mentioning that we are an optimistic bunch. I would tend to say that we are boldly optimistic. What do you see? I mean, does that even make any sense? Is there, in your mind, a difference between blind optimism and bold optimism?
Wow. Give me the hard questions, Doug.
Wait until we get to algebra.
Please excuse my dear Aunt Sally. That's all I remember.
Right, me too.
You know, So 20-somethings are all about blind optimism. They're like, we think that everything is going to work great and the cause world will, you know, absolutely save everything. And if we all change our Twitter profile to this, you know, we're going to get this. And I would say that, you know, my, you know, that's sort of my stereotype of the 20-something optimists. I would say that what ends up bringing us to bold optimism is when we've been so optimistic as to have tried something and failed and then tried something else and failed. And I really think that's the next, you know, holy grail of optimism is the optimist who has tried, had their face punched in and tried again.
Right. That would be me. and actually a lot of people who have been in the traditional advertising world have or are going through that right now. What excites you most about the future? Because I'm gonna ask you your bold predictions for 2012 here. We're gonna get started before we're gonna get the jump on all the news organizations. But I want you to talk about what excites you finishing out the rest of this year and leading into 2012.
I would say that where I'm getting excited is that I'm seeing more and more people feel like they can use technology in a way that lets them connect on their own terms and everything like that. Like we're getting beyond, you have a smartphone, so you must be a geek.
Right.
To of course you have a smartphone, and what are you doing with yours? And so I think that's like kind of my biggest excitement. Like the people are talking. I bought a Kindle Fire, which I haven't picked up yet from the UPS store, but I will after we hang up this call. And I'm looking forward to it. I've had an iPad and an iPad 2, and I think they're good devices, but I'm interested at this Kindle Fire because it's the $200 version of what the mainstream is going to look at in a tablet. And when I say that, I'm really interested into understanding what's going to happen next with the mainstream person's adoption. You know, the baby boomer set, you know, probably our parents' age, is very much the reigning set of people spending money.
Right.
And Tom Peters has been saying this for a decade or so. But I'm totally in belief of that. So as I'm paying attention to this stuff, I'm thinking I want to pay attention to how I would market to the 50 and 60 somethings who are more Kindle Fire users than they are iPad 2 users and who are not necessarily tweeting and Facebooking. And what can we do with them? That's my biggest turn on.
That's going to be really interesting. You're absolutely right. Absolutely. Jerry Sharasheski, if you're listening right now, Chris Brogan said it. Jerry and Shelley are friends who run Grown Up Marketing in New York. Again, a shameless plug.
Hi, Jerry Shelley.
Yeah. So bold predictions. But before we get to that, we did receive a question from someone from the Advertising Week Social Club family, our friend Stephanie. She wants to know what role bold optimism has played in your business success.
I am thinking that bold optimism has allowed me to not worry too bad about finding the credentials or finding the backup material to get me to the point I need to succeed. Meaning I've never sat around going, well, no one's given me the swing at this. I better wait until I have the right kinds of, you know, opportunity. Mm-hmm. I just take the swing. I mean, when I opened up my first ever consulting company, New Marketing Labs, I said, we serve mostly Fortune 100 companies. Now, the thing was, I had served zero customers at that point. I had served nobody. I turned open the door and, you know, we had people from Titleist Golf say, well, we're not a Fortune 100, but we're in the 500. Is that okay? I like, they were qualifying themselves to me. I was like, yeah, no, that's okay.
I love it. Do you play the Pro V1?
You know what? I can't hit a golf ball with a hammer. I when they brought me in, I was just like, you understand, I couldn't. Like the only time I ever went out to golf, it was with my old boss Dave Johnson, and he hated me. Like he turned red, and I thought he was going to have a heart attack. I kept hitting the ball like low and on the ground. I guess they call them worm burners.
Yeah.
And that was my entire golf game. So I said to him, I said, listen, I would love to walk around with you, smack a stick in the air as if I'm hitting a golf ball and finish this off and get drinking with you.
Nice.
And, you know, that's that to my day. If I'm ever asked to go golfing, I say, only if I don't bring any balls.
Oh, that's hilarious. So let's move into bold predictions. Just give us a couple of bold predictions for 2012.
Bold predictions for 2012. I have this one that I keep saying, which will probably not be true, but I'm just going to say it because I keep saying it. what is the deal? Can we possibly have what I'm calling loose mobile social networks, meaning we have all this stuff like near field communications creeping into smartphones sooner and sooner. Mm-hmm. There's already GPS and other stuff, you know, attached. My thought being, how can we do it that you and I and a bunch of other people are all the biggest Jay-Z fans and Kanye fans in the world? We're happening to be in the same rough area of Portland, Oregon. We can all, you know, go in through something called a preference location register, say, I would love to hear from other Jay-Z and Kanye fans in this neighborhood while I'm here. And the social network doesn't exist except for in that point in time. But there's always an option to say, okay, I'm done with it for now, but I actually kind of liked these people, so I'm willing to make sort of a, you know, an off space, you know, off time social network around this as well.
That's very interesting. And I like that. I like that. What's another bold prediction you got for us?
Another bold prediction is that the people who end up being in jeopardy from Google Plus is not Facebook like everyone seems to keep blathering about. It's Twitter. And I think Twitter is going to suffer a little bit of a dent in itself this coming year.
Interesting. All right. Well, we'll revisit that next year for sure. I'm just trying to think if there's anything else I want to talk about with bold predictions or bold optimism. How about this? Let's do this because we've talked about young people. We've talked about their exuberance. We've talked about their enthusiasm. In my experience, a tremendous amount of talent with a lot of young people, with the kids today. What's one piece of bold advice that you would give them?
Bold advice. I would say, you know, I put like so much weight into this. I would say that for me, the best piece of advice is to experiment and execute often. Mm-hmm. Be willing to acknowledge, apologize, and act when you make mistakes. Mm-hmm. And continue being, you know, acting in service of other people. Where we all get it wrong is we worry about ourselves and how we're going to succeed. Mm-hmm. When we worry about helping others succeed, we always get more out of it. Finally, be your own damn self. I addressed a big thing of Public Relations Society of America, the annual event, which was just under 3,000 people, and it was hugely populated by the PRSSA, which are like, you know, the younger, the school age people. Mm-hmm. And this guy asked me, you know, a question sort of like that, and I said, listen, the one thing I've learned in life now that I'm 41 is the more I act exactly like me and the less I act like anybody else or the less I fit into a box, the better my life becomes, the more money I make, and the more successful I've been. Please be you. It'll be a lot more fun.
Amen to that. And as good John said, be yourself. No one can ever tell you you're doing it wrong. That is for sure. Now, we're going to wrap up here in a second, but we always want to give our guests, besides Oregon Hazelnuts, the floor in the shameless promotion section of our conversation. What can you divulge in terms of speaking? What can you divulge in terms of you know, books, things like that? Tell us what you've got coming up.
So I have a brand new book coming out right around Christmas time. So it's a perfect last minute gift to give people who have bought their Kindle Fire and need something to put on it. It's called Google Plus for Business, How Google's Newest Social Network Changes Everything, which I believe to be very true. And then as a little tease, stay tuned for the February issue of Success Magazine, which goes in stands in January, and look for the cover story, which involves Kim Kardashian and several other celebrities, and is written by yours truly, because you could tell I'm obviously the kind of person who knows a lot about Kim Kardashian.
Well, I had you tabbed. I had you tabbed from the beginning, of course. any speaking engagements coming up?
You know, you had to ask. Let me look. I am going to speak with the nice folks at Deluxe, the people who do the...
Checks.
The Checks is how we tend to know them. They've got all kinds of other small business stuff. That'll be the 30th or so. I am going to – the end of the year is a little quiet because it's winter time. And then I'm flying out to – Entrepreneur Magazine is having a big conference and I'm flying out there. Okay. And then beyond that, it gets a lot more busy in the beginning part of the year. So I'm quiet for winter.
Yeah, it's good. I get that. Well, as always, Chris Brogan, really appreciate you taking the time. Everybody, get to know Chris. You can see him on the Google+. You can see him on the Twitter at Chris Brogan. They can go to chrisbrogan.com. Where else can they go to see you?
Besides chrisbrogan.com, the place I've been the most is Google+ lately. So if you went to chrisbrogan.com/PLUS, you can get involved in the madness going on there. It's been a lot of fun.
That's cool. I'm looking forward to reading the book. And again, I want to thank you so much, man. I really appreciate it. And thanks to Ann Bryant, who as always is wicked awesome for setting this up for us. If I don't talk to you, have a wonderful holiday and have a bold 2012, my friend.
You too, Doug. Thanks again.